Hello and welcome to Data Boca, a podcast presented by Chief Healthcare Executive. I'm Ron Southwick, Senior Editor of Chief Healthcare Executive. With Data Boca, we explore technology, innovation, and the transformation of healthcare. In this episode, we talk with William Chan, the CEO and co-founder of Iodine Software, an AI company that works with hundreds of hospitals. We talk about using AI to improve business, reduce administrative headaches, and use resources more effectively. He also talks about what hospitals are looking for in AI and technology solutions and how organizations are demanding results more quickly. It's a terrific conversation, so let's get started. Thank you for joining us today. We are talking with William Chan, the co-founder and CEO of Iodine Software. William, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Ron. Appreciate you inviting me.
Well, why don't we just start out very simply, just talk a little bit about your background and your work in building Iodine.
Yeah, I'd be happy to do that. Ron, I'm a technologist by training. I have a computer science degree and an MBA. So I know a little bit about business and a little bit about technology. But prior to founding Iodine, I had co-founded another company called Crimson. That was doing physician performance management. As we left that company is now part of Optum Insights, realized that there was still a lot to be done in terms of improving the lives and the workflows of caregivers in hospital systems. And so we started Iodine with the express purpose of introducing technologies to solve some of these, if you will, administrative toil problems that show up in hospitals. But these are unique administrative activities because you or I can't actually be involved in those decision-making unless we have the clinical background, clinical expertise and clinical knowledge. And that's why I said I have a computer science degree and an MBA. I do not have an MD to my name. So recognize that hospitals are using clinicians to make decisions that are administrative in nature, but they're using these clinicians because of the knowledge that they have, the unique knowledge and training that they have. And in order to solve more and more of these decisions that need to be made around the hospital, and I'll give you a description of some of these decisions, they had to go hire more and more of these people. Some of these decisions are things like, should I admit this patient? Should I discharge this patient? What is the level of care that I should provide this patient? Should this patient stay within an observation unit? Should I admit this patient into inpatient? Does this patient have the appropriate level of documentation? Is the documentation accurate? If it isn't, what are the things that need to be added or subtracted from that documentation to make it accurate? All of these decisions require somebody to go review clinical information and then decide whether there's something to be acted upon. And so we realized that that was the problem we were trying to solve. And so we embarked on this journey to go try to solve that problem through the use of technology.
Now, you're working with literally hundreds of hospitals at this point. How many hospitals is Iodine working with now?
Yeah, we probably have over 900 hospitals around the country that use the Iodine software today to solve that specific problem. We started out addressing the problem of clinical documentation accuracy, right? So there's a capability or a organization within hospitals called Clinical Documentation Integrity. And their role is to ensure that patient documentation is captured accurately because there are two outcomes to that. One, obviously, is that you want to ensure that the patient care is as higher quality as it can be, and accurate patient documentation ensures that. And the other one is you want to make sure that the hospital is reimbursed accurately based on the documentation, right? And so that's what we embarked upon. And we started to look at the problem, realized that this was back in the day, if you will, existing technologies, rule-based mechanisms couldn't solve that problem easily. It was just a very complex problem to solve. And that the use of artificial intelligence, specifically things like machine learning models, was required to solve that problem. And so throughout the years, we've been able to cultivate and hone that product to the point where it's now used by hundreds of hospitals around the country.
Now, I understand you just recently released another AI-powered tool to help hospitals with utilization management. Could you talk about that a little bit?
So it very much falls in the same realm of work, if you will, that I described with clinical documentation or the general problem that I described earlier on, which is that there are decisions that need to be made, right? In the clinical documentation case, is the documentation accurate, and how do I know if it's accurate or not, right? In the utilization management problem, the question to be asked there is, do I have the patient in the right level of care? Should I keep the patient in observation? Should I admit the patient into an inpatient setting? And do I have the proper level of documentation to do one or the other? And in order to do that, the clinician has to absorb and assimilate a lot of clinical information. They have to look at vital signs, they have to look at clinical information, they also have to look at documentation. They have to synthesize all of this information before they make a decision. And so it's that same level of technology that is required in clinical documentation that we've basically just said, hey, we can solve this problem in a very similar manner in utilization management as well.
There's been so much talk about AI and healthcare and its ability to transform the way people are treated, the way diseases are diagnosed. For the near term, do you think the bigger payoff in AI is going to be looking at solutions that are focused on the business end, helping hospitals do business more easily, maybe taking some of that administrative burden off of their clinicians and staff?
I do, Ron. That's a great question. I do think that that is indeed where AI can have the most, if you will, bang for the buck in a very short amount of time, because there are a lot of these activities that are actually very well suited to artificial intelligence, to generative AI, synthesizing, summarizing information, right, providing insights. They don't exclude the human from making the decision. They just help provide the information in a very succinct way so that the human, the clinician in this case, can make that decision with the right information a lot faster. So I think there's a lot that can be done very quickly. And hospitals can reap the rewards pretty quickly on this. In some ways, you can kind of look at it as being the low-hanging fruit of the promise of AI.
With the hospital systems you work with, I mean, are you hearing a lot from systems that saying they're really looking for tools like this to help ease that burden in their staff that are just overwhelmed or just it's taking away from doing the higher echelon things that they want to be doing?
Yes, we've heard this, and anything that's post-COVID, even during COVID, the number one issue has been the supply of labor and the cost of labor, right? And so there are a lot of activities that need to be done around the hospital, and there's just not enough specialized staff to do that, right? Once again, you and I, can't do this. We need clinicians to do this. And so yes, there's a lot of need for this. Hospitals are asking for this. Hospitals are saying, how can I reduce the administrative burden on my staff so that they can focus in on doing the other work, which is truly providing care to the patient? How can I minimize the amount of data collection, data summarization that I need to do in order to make my job a lot quicker and more efficient?
Now, you mentioned not being an MD per se and having some business background. I'm kind of wondering what advantages that might give you in terms of looking at healthcare through some fresh eyes, because I mean, most obviously hospitals and health systems are outstanding at treating people with acute care needs, but sometimes have been slow to adopt technologies and really incorporate them in meaningful ways. So I'd just be curious from your perspective, what do you think bringing that different set of eyes and the set of experiences has enabled you to see in healthcare?
I think it's twofold, and look, I'm not maligning the people who are doing the work. That there's a lot of work to be done, and there's a lot that is a lot that they are doing. It's very complex, but sometimes it helps to kind of first understand the root cause of the problem. What exactly is the problem we're trying to solve? And having been trained in the business world, part of what we do is to try to get to the heart of the problem. What is the heart of the problem? And then you try to figure out what that solution is. And we look at things that have been done a certain way and probably been done in a, you know, in some form of fashion for quite a long time. And then you ask questions like, why are you doing this? What is the, what is it that you're hoping to achieve? What is the ultimate goal? And, you know, as a business person and as a technologist, I tend to want to figure out, are there ways in which we can short circuit some of the workflow so that we can get a more direct A to B connection instead of a, you know, a roundabout way to getting to a solution. So I think that's what, as a business person and a technologist, I can, you know, and my team can bring to the table.
I was just at the HIMSS conference in Orlando recently, and just something you mentioned there about like really identifying the problem, that seemed to be a theme I was hearing more and more at HIMSS from the healthcare leaders in terms of advising some of their peers, you know, if they're thinking about a technology solution, to really think about a solution, think about the problem you're trying to solve first, and then look for the solution. Is that sometimes where sometimes health systems make a mistake, even a well-intentioned mistake, but they're looking at the device first before they're looking at maybe the problem they really need to solve?
I think there's a tendency to do that. I wouldn't necessarily put health systems in as a unique, you know, unique animal in this regard. I think everyone, you know, when you have a bright, shiny new object, you want to go try to go take a look at it and see what you can do with it. And I think that bright, shiny object today is AI, is generative AI. And so people are going to that with the expectation that it's going to solve a lot of problems. I think the smart money is, you know, the smart practitioners, if you will, are the ones who go look at it and say, I have this particular problem. Can I solve it with AI? And can you prove to me that you can solve it with AI? I think there's a lot of tire kicking. There's a lot of prototyping around AI right now. And there's a lot of ideas and a lot of vision. You know, the smart ones are the ones who are going around and say, I get the vision of AI, but can you solve this specific problem? And can you prove to me that you can solve this specific problem and show me the results of that solution?
Since you work with hospitals so often, I just was wondering, you mentioned that need to show results more. Are you seeing that hospitals and health systems are asking that more often now, maybe offering a shorter window where they want to see that return of investment, where they just can't wait 5 years to see the ROI?
Yes, exactly right. And they should be doing that, right? They need to make sure that they are doing diligence on the solution. They need to make sure that any solution that is technology that they are investing in does have a return, and it should be a quick return. I'd say, you know, we're proud of the fact that we can deliver a return within a year, right? But solutions, technology solutions should be able to do that. You should be able to prove that there is some kind of improvement either from a reimbursement perspective, a quality perspective, a workflow perspective, or a lifestyle perspective even, right? To the users of that technology. You want to be able to show that and have reference points that prove that those benefits are being accrued to the users.
Now, you're working with systems, I'm guessing, all over the country. I mean, do you find different challenges working with, say, different systems, maybe like with a smaller provider that may not have as many resources as some of the larger providers? Or what's the experience you see in terms of like working with different systems that maybe have levels of capabilities with new technology?
There's an interesting observation here. I think with the larger systems, especially with around AI, some of the larger systems are trying to do it themselves, and they want to go dabble and get into the technology and think that you know, let's try to build this ourselves. Let's try to build a solution themselves. And I'm sure there are some organizations where that will be possible. But the flip side of it is that the smaller organizations are saying, hey, we need this technology. We know this technology has promise, and quite frankly, we know we're not going to be able to build it ourselves. So let's go out and find the best solution that is available out there so that we can embrace this quickly. And so you do sometimes find more interest and more genuine interest from smaller organizations simply because they recognize the need and they know that they're not in a position to try to solve this themselves. So they want to go out and find the best available vendor to solve it for them.
That's interesting because sometimes you'd figure, a larger system might have more of the capability. But as you said, and I'm hearing that more and more, a lot of systems are trying to do some of their own solutions for AI, which could work, but sometimes there's advantages in working with partners that, especially for a smaller system, that they're just not going to have the resources or staff to do some of those things.
I think organizations can do a great job in honing in on the problem and maybe prototyping a solution for that problem. But when you build any kind of software solution or IT solution, it's something that you're going to deploy in your organization for a long time to come. And so there is the cost and thinking behind the maintenance of that solution that needs to be part of the total cost of ownership, if you will, if you're going to try to build it yourself. And so, hopefully these organizations are thinking through what it's going to take for me to not just build a first version, but maintain that version, and then over time evolve that version. So I'm going to get version 2.0 and 3.0 in years to come.
There's been a lot of discussion about what needs to be done to regulate AI in healthcare. President Biden issued an executive order a few months back. Just from your perspective, what should be done to help make sure there's appropriate, guide rails to make sure AI is used responsibly in healthcare? What kind of regulation should there be in place? But also maybe what kind of regulation do you not want to see?
To be honest, I think there's a lot of self-regulation that I'm already talking about, because I think organizations are starting to say, hey, I want to see the proof in the pudding. I want to be able to see that you're actually delivering on a result. You have a result. It's not spewing out hallucinations. It's not giving the users the wrong results. I want you as a vendor to be able to prove that to me before I'm going to embrace it in my organization. So there's a lot of self-regulating that I think that's already going on. And as organizations become more and more demanding of the results and the ROI, you'll see a lot of that regulation just happen. Vendors aren't going to be able to just go out there and introduce a new product, because nobody's going to use it unless you can prove that it is safe. You can prove that it's going to deliver quality. You can prove that it's going to deliver an ROI. I think that is probably a more efficient way for a lot of these things to be regulated in the marketplace.
Just from your perspective, we always like to talk to founders and business leaders about, some of the lessons they've learned from their success. So what do you think's been a key lesson that you've learned in terms of building a company that's been really critical in achieving the success you have?
I think there are two learnings that I picked up early on and continue to make sure that we don't forget that lesson, and make sure that people who come after me continue to ask those questions. And first off is, what exactly is the problem we're trying to solve? And it's not just a surface level question. Really dig deep into it. What exactly is the problem we're trying to solve? Who are we trying to solve it for? What does the person who we're trying to solve it for think they're going to get? What is the expectation coming out from that they'll expect out of a solution? Digging deep into that. And when you keep asking that question and digging deeper, you'll really get to the heart of what needs to be produced, what product needs to be delivered to solve that problem. And then the other one is, even if you ask all those questions, you're not going to bat a thousand. You're going to make some mistakes along the way where, your product market fit isn't going to be exactly there. And so to have the humility and quick-wittedness, if you will, to recognize when your product is not hitting the mark with the customer need, and being able to pivot or change quickly.
That the ability to sort of recognize when something's not quite doing what you hoped is that humility you mentioned seems like a really important skill for a leader to have. Any examples of especially a lesson you learned from something that didn't quite go as you'd hoped, but end up being useful in terms of getting to where you wanted to go eventually?
Well, I think, initially we built a solution that was intended to connect physicians. This was very early in the days of IDA. We built a solution that connected physicians with information that we thought they wanted to have, right? And very quickly realized that there was somebody else in the middle of that loop that you didn't want to disintermediate, in this case, the clinical documentation person. You wanted that specialist still in the loop, and we were trying to produce a solution that went directly to the physician. That didn't quite work for the physician, and it didn't quite work for the CDI specialist either. And so when we realized that and said, let's build a solution that connects the two of them, not disintermediates one of them, that became the solution that worked. So, you know, there was a little trial and error. We thought we could do everybody a world of good by just kind of short-circuiting a process. And no, we had to work within the process. And in fact, it was the right thing to do because physicians wanted another set of eyes looking at the information before they wanted to be presented with a decision.
That's interesting, getting that feedback. And yeah, that seems to be like another thing, being able to willing and listen to the feedback and not be defensive about it, but
yeah,
they're saying, yeah. And refining.
Well, I'll say this about physicians. They are not shy to provide feedback. So
that's funny. I asked another leader, like, what's the best feedback he got for a new technology tool they developed. He said, well, the best feedback sometimes is no feedback, because clinicians are typically really upfront about when something's not working.
That's true. They just stop using your product. And when you got to keep track of that. When somebody stops using your product, something's wrong.
Any other advice for, like, maybe the people that are trying to bring a company to life, or like they're just starting with their journey as a founder? Any other tips along the way that would be helpful for somebody that's just starting to build and grow their company?
I think it's very important to know what your mission in life is. And I mean life as a company. What is it that you're trying to do? What is it that you're trying to change in your small little sliver or part of the world? And then once you have that and you believe it, don't lose sight of it as you grow and as you expand and as you go out into new markets or what have you. Always be true to your mission. And when you are true to your mission, the people who you surround yourself with will also embrace that same mission. And then you all can move mountains and make all these changes a lot faster and a lot better because you all believe in the same mission.
And that seems to also raise the point of building a good team and having the team that believes in that mission as well.
That's right. And if they don't believe in the mission, then you're not part of the team.
Even if they have like that great skill or like they look great on the resume, but if they're not in the mission, then you're better
off. It's not going to work out in the long term, right? I mean, you could probably, and they could probably fake it for a while, but if that's not if they don't really truly want to solve some of the problems that we have in healthcare, right? They're going to do it for a while, but you know, the fire is not going to be there. I want people on my team to really believe and truly want to change, healthcare, our part of this gigantic environment called healthcare. You know, we're going to deliver technology that solves this particular problem. Are you part of it or are you not?
Sounds like a good note to end on, because this time has flown, unbelievable. but thanks so much for taking some time to talk with us today. I really appreciate it. Enjoyed the conversation.
Yeah, likewise, Ron. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Databook, a podcast by Chief Healthcare Executive, a brand of MJH Life Sciences. You can subscribe to Databook wherever you get your podcasts. For latest news, insights, and analysis of the healthcare industry, visit chiefhealthcareexecutive.com. You can follow us on LinkedIn, Facebook, and X, the platform formerly known as Twitter. I'm Ron Southwick, Senior Editor of Chief Healthcare Executive. Take care.